Hello, I'm Janelle Anderson, host of the Human Proof of Concept podcast. Before a recent NYC MedTech event, I had the privilege of sitting down with each of the speakers to ask them a few questions. Here's one of those interviews.
So the first question, it doesn't get any easier. Just if you could tell me your name, what you do, and where you work.
So my name is Neil Madhuka. I am finishing up my PhD, 3 weeks left, at Cornell Medical School. And I work on designing methods that use artificial intelligence and machine learning to accelerate various parts of drug development and discovery process.
I see. 3 weeks.
3 weeks, yeah. It's an exciting and stressful time.
Mm-hmm. And 3 weeks till your dissertation?
3 weeks since my defense, yes.
Until your defense,
yes.
Okay. Excellent.
So July 7th is the big day.
Wow. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
You're looking ahead to that in 3 weeks, but looking back to high school and taking that as a starting point, what did you want to do when you were in high school?
Yeah, so to be honest, since the beginning of, I think, as far as I can remember, I've been very interested in biology and mathematics. But in high school, I didn't really think there was any way to combine them. So my goal, up till about the first or second year of undergrad, was to be a physician and treat patients myself. And it wasn't till I got into undergrad and had to deal with a personal experience of my grandfather being diagnosed and eventually passing away from cancer that I realized a lot of what the change you can affect in medicine and biology isn't by practicing it, so to speak. Not to say that they don't do a tremendous job, but there's just so much out there that's yet to be discovered. And in my grandfather's case, they knew about his tumor, but there just wasn't any drug out there to treat it. So that what got me interested, working on the drug development side, seeing what can we do to bring new drugs that can be used. So the physicians out there have a huge arsenal of compounds they can use for no matter what the patient type or the cancer type. And that's what kind of drew me to computational biology, which sounds like a fancy really term, but it's just, to be honest, it's simply taking ideas that have been around in math and computer science and finding ways to apply them to interesting biological problems. So that was also pretty nice because it saw me connecting two of my interests that I didn't think could be connected to this.
Excellent. And how did you get from there to here?
Yeah. So you mean from high school?
From high school.
So in undergrad, I studied biochemistry and mathematics. Once again, thinking physician, but not really knowing what I wanted to do, how I wanted to do it. Then after my grandfather experienced cancer, I began to dive a little bit more into how, cancer specifically, but how the drug development field works.
Mm-hmm. And your undergrad was where?
At Emory.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I did some class at the University of Tennessee as well, my hometown. But after that, I was lucky enough to do an internship at the Center for Prostate Disease Research my junior year. And that really showed me, the cutting edge research that's being done. And that was a group that focuses on prostate cancer. But I was lucky enough to jump in right at the time where they were getting this huge sequencing data set. So they really had to face this idea of there's so much data, what they could do with it. And that's what kind of got me interested in this computational biology approach, which is using all the data out there and figuring out what to do with it. From there, I applied to my PhD at Weill Cornell, and now 4 years later, here I am, looking to do something else.
Great.
Yeah.
I guess I should ask you what's next, then.
Yeah.
Do you have that lined up?
Yeah, no. So it's actually an interesting story. I think during my PhD, we developed a lot of methods that I think could be very helpful and kind of revolutionize the way drug development is today. But, one classic problem with science is there's so many great ideas out there that never actually make it to the commercial field. So myself and my advisor are actually planning to jump into a startup to work on applying artificial intelligence, machine learning to both small biotechs, big pharma, and even our own drug discovery. So the startup's name is 1-3 Biotech. It's a strange name. Happy to get into it later. But that's the next step for me. So come August, that's where I'll be.
Great. Good for you. Will it be based here in New York City?
It will be based here in New York. So we've actually gotten into the Cornell Tech Runway Incubator Program.
I see. Good.
Which is, based on Roosevelt Island and looking to combine the tech world with the biotech world. And I think it looks quite promising.
Good. Good for you. Was there a defining moment that you can identify in retrospect where if it weren't for that, maybe it seemed like a small thing at the time, but if it weren't for that small thing, you would have gone in a different direction?
Yes. So I'll say a couple different moments almost, right? So I'd say, physician versus PhD, while in the same general field, I think my grandfather's diagnosis is what showed me there. Because it wasn't like the physicians were bad. They were fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was simply that there was nothing else they could do, so more needed to be discovered. So that was kind of pushed me to more the research angle. And then since I've been a child, I've always been, people always say, why I do medicine, why I'm interested in this. And, you know, part of the answer is, yes, I want to help people. But, you know, maybe the more selfish answer is, I think it's fun. I've always loved puzzles. And I think, you know, it was one of my high school biology classes where I saw how much of biology and genetics is similar to a puzzle. Mm-hmm. You have some code, right? Some sequence of letters and amino acids, and you have to figure out what that means for a person, what that means for a disease. And I guess seeing that translation was kind of what pushed me into the biology field and the medical field to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Great. And who was the most important person or mentor that you had along the way?
Okay. So I think I'll give a few different answers. I think, you know, in most recent terms, my advisor at Cornell, my PhD advisor, has been incredibly helpful, both mm-hmm. not only to help me develop as a scientist, but, you know, we always say in my lab, his lab that I'm in, that you want to think of classic ways to disrupt problems. And, you know, I think in science, a lot of times people get stuck in what they've done. And Dr. Elemento, Olivia Elemento, my advisor, has always thought of, like, what is a way we can kind of turn the problem on its head? So that's been amazingly influential for me, because that's how I always wanted to think, and having someone guide me in that way has been great. And then on, you know, the longer term, you know, I think my family, my father is a professor, and then, you know, my grandfather was an academic. Even my mother is working in various parts of computer science. So seeing, you know, growing up in a very academic problem-solving household, my dad and I love to solve puzzles. So, like, seeing that from a very early stage, and we always joke about who's smarter. So I think a competitive fire was in me from a very early stage. So, like, what can I solve that he can't?
When did that start? How old were you when you started having that debate?
I can't even remember. There's a picture of me when I'm 3 years old sitting at this table. And I don't remember this, but my parents tell me that my dad brought a math problem home. And he's like, Neil, see if you can figure this out. And I was there for apparently hours trying to figure it out. So I think it started very early. And, you know, my dad always says that objectively, he has a PhD. He is the most educated one of our family.
For 3 weeks.
Yeah. So for now, in the 3 weeks, I will now be able to say, no, you're not. So I think that's been something that's been influencing me for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And if you think back to high school,
Sure. What
do you wish somebody had told you? Or what would you tell a high school student today?
Yeah. So I would say, in high school, you're kind of taught, and I think this is the way it has to be done, right? There's a lot you don't know. And that kind of sticks with you. I think I remember earlier in my PhD, I was working on a problem, and in the back of my head, I was thinking, there's no way this could work. There's a lot of smart people out there. Someone must have done this before. There's a reason no one's done this before.
Mm.
I would say to a lot of high schoolers, like, don't be afraid, as cocky as it may sound. There's some times where it's okay to think that you're the smartest person in the room, right? You know, if you don't think that way, you're not going to take these big risks. And, you know, to be honest, most times you will be wrong. Many times you'll think you're the smartest person and realize you're not even close. But without that kind of sort of thinking, of being willing to challenge the big ideas in whatever way, you're not going to be able to affect large-scale change. You'll just be able to slowly push the needle forward without making that big leap that people always wanted to.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of something that Richard Feynman said or wrote, okay, so you don't want to work on problems that people have solved already?
Yeah.
Well, keep doing those, and pretty soon you'll be working on problems that nobody has solved already, and you'll be just as likely to solve them as you will
exactly.
on the practice problems.
Exactly, exactly. Think of these ideas, right? There's so many problems, at least especially in medicine, that no one knows what to do with them. And I think it needs that fresh thinking. So as early as high school, think about, like, what would you do if you had all the resources to change this field? And then, why do you think you can do it? And at a certain point, you just need to believe in yourself to try it out. Like, take the crazy idea, take the plunge, you know. I always joke that, you know, I think I grew up on Disney movies. And today, my favorite movie is Pirates of the Caribbean. And I always thought
even the fifth one, I heard it's
not the fifth one. The first one, and I'm pretending like the rest didn't happen. Just the first
okay.
one. That these ideas, like, Disney movies were always these absurd stories, right? Like, this young kid thinks he's gonna, like, beat this, like, giant person and, like, marry the princess. And, like, from childhood, we're kind of thought to believe that, you know, this is an absurd dream. And I always joke that just doing a PhD was half, sometimes the smart decision maker, but also, like, the most absurd choice I ever made. Like,
yeah,
why,
it's absurd.
As a 22-year-old, did I think, 21-year-old, did I think I could solve a problem that no one else has solved? But I think, you know, you just have to be willing to have that, like, childishness in you and, like, have that ambition and be like, I'm going to try it. If it fails, it fails. But if it works, I'll be sweet.
Then it would be amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, with that, good luck with your new venture.
Perfect. Thank you.